you don't know it by now, I can be a bit controversial in how I handle my business and in how I coach other designers about their business. Running a design firm, or any small business for that matter, is not a one-size-fits-all wrapped up in a pretty bow. It's about building the framework from the ground up and having a solid foundation that will make it recession-proof. The Design Paradigm is a comprehensive and powerful coaching program for interior designers wanting a challenge and looking to grow. It has epic twists and turns in the way you might think about business. If you are a little rebellious in thought, want to win it, avoid groupthink, don't care what others are doing, and want a sustainable business over the long haul that makes you stand out, then the Design Paradigm is the right place for you. We will be a partner in reimagining and refocusing your business from the ground up. Find out more at theinteriordesignparadigm.com. Sometimes there is more to a no-show or ghosting than meets the eyes. Often it is the client's issue with making decisions that was not clear at the beginning of the relationship, but sometimes, let's face it, it's on us for not having done a good enough job on the front end, doing a stellar intake to deliver the wowza enough to create that excitement where the client is dying to get the project done in all of its glory.
Welcome to the Damn Good Designer Podcast. Join host Cheryl and Liz, the visionary and integrator balancing all the moving parts of a full-service interior design firm. Get ready for a wild ride as they challenge the norms, challenge the industry, and challenge you with damn good truths about what success looks like today. Now your hosts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Damn Good Designer Podcast. It has been a crazy week, and I'm sure it's been a crazy week for a lot of people with storms everywhere and freezing cold here, and then 2 days later, it's 70 degrees. It's just welcome to Florida and the Florida weather. It's no big surprise why there's so many memes for Florida, Liz. And Liz is sending me pictures of snow in New Hampshire and all that. I mean, it's been kind of crazy. And you know, the problem is for me is that my closet's teeny tiny and I live in a teeny tiny house on the beach. And there's a lot of work going, carrying the clothes up and down the stairs and trying to dress. I you know, sometimes I feel like I've gone and gotten a whole new wardrobe because at the end of the season, I'll go, oh my God, there's all my sweaters. I had no idea that they were all there. So anyway, it's been kind of crazy. How's it been in New Hampshire other than cold and snowy?
Yes, we had a good dump of snow, and it looks so beautiful outside, but it's definitely cold. It's definitely, we're in the thick of winter now, so everyone's enjoying it. But I can't complain because, you know, it's been very mild and rainy. Everyone was blaming me for bringing the Pensacola weather up here.
Yeah, well, it's only like 72 degrees here right now, so I can't really complain too much anyway. I'm just saying that it's just every other day, it's something new. You just don't know what the heck to wear, and you have to have, literally, you have to have two wardrobes when you live in North Florida.
Yep.
You know, like in South Florida, it's not so much, but North Florida, it's terrible. Okay, all right, so let's get going here. Today, we're digging in on a topic that has come up with a lot of us at one time or another. I think there's no design firm that really escapes this, and that's clients dragging their feet, hemming and hawing, after the presentation, and maybe even ghosting you. So what do you do? What do you do? I know this can drive people really crazy. It definitely is something that we don't like. We don't get this very often, but we do get the ghosting at the very beginning. Like, you know, when you send someone a scope of work and then you hear crickets and they don't say anything. I mean, like, I don't get that. Like, who raised these people is what I want to say. And I was talking to one of the designers that I'm working with on an annual basis, and she had a great opportunity and it was really fabulous. And I was so excited for her and all this. And the client sought her out because of her amazing work. And then freaking A, I say, hey, well, how'd it go? Nothing, absolutely nothing, Cheryl, not a single word. And I couldn't believe it. So that's a whole nother podcast in of itself, because that's right after you give them a scope of work. We're talking today more about the holdups after presentation, or even maybe sometimes before that, when you're trying to get the job going and that kind of thing. And I'm talking about not the legitimate holdups where someone has, you know, that might be sick or something like that, or the COVID's deal or whatever. And you know, I just think this is a really good topic to discuss because it's hard. It's a hard situation, and it's really hard when it's not the client's fault, but the contractors or the subs. And that's, again, probably a whole nother podcast. Right now, today, we're going to be talking about how it works really with the clients when it's the clients that are doing it. And we have lots of ways of handling it. But, you know, let's just talk about it and see what you think. Are you ready to dig in on this one, Liz?
I am. Yeah, I think this is great because I think there are a lot of tactics to kind of how to hopefully avoid some of these things. But it can be tricky because sometimes you'll have a client that kind of sneaks in the mix who does need either extra handholding or really to be kind of endeared to what the process needs to be for a more productive outcome. So I think this is a great topic for us to cover.
Okay, good. Let's dig into it. So what are we really meaning here? What exactly is client indecision, or what are we talking about here? Because there is a lot of different places that clients can be indecisive, you know? But we're really talking about a client who can't make a decision to save their life. I mean, really, but I'm thinking we're focusing more on the presentation here is really what we're thinking about. But how does this impact your time, the time that you spend instigating feedback, just the mere logistics of trying to get with a client to get them to make a decision. And then you're trying to decide if you're, you know, what it is, what's really going on, and you're having to follow up. And, you know, that's extra time that you have to do when things aren't really running as smoothly as they could be, especially if you're doing a flat fee. So that's kind of a problem. How does this delay in moving the needle on a project really impact your ability to pay your employees or yourself? Or, I mean, all of these things, I think, come into it. And this is not something that I am good at dealing with. You know, I really am not. Liz will have to talk me off the ledge with this, because I think that when you set it up in a certain way, people should be, you know, responsive to you. And I think it also threatens the integrity of the design service you're providing them, because it causes more angst with you. You may be thinking, well, gee, you know, if they're not going to pull the trigger on this or something, or if they're going to all of a sudden say, I don't want to do this, even though we lock them, you know, a client in a contract, and it's a flat fee, but it's also, you know, minimum expenditure and all that. But it's still, you know, if you think it's happening and you're planning on happening it, you know, say the month after presentation, you're writing orders or even the month of or whatever, then that means you're going to be taking on more work, right? I mean, you're going to be having to think about like, okay, I got to pay the bills and all that. So anyway, I think that there's usually five different categories really that might be the issue. So maybe we can just break them down here and a little bit of talking about this. I'd love to be able to talk about this and get feedback from people, because I would love to hear what other people's experiences are. But obviously the first thing is something personal going on, right? I mean, maybe illness, family, money issues. I mean, there could be a multiple things that are just simply a personal issue with this and why they're not, you know, pulling the trigger and getting back to you. I think the second one is more client not respecting the time frame that's set up to manage the project. But the question would be there, and we will dig into this, but, you know, do they really understand the process? That would be the question I would ask someone on my team, because that would be the first thing that comes to my mind, because I'm, you know, client centric. And I'm thinking, well, if do they actually understand? Because, you know, they don't do what we do for a living, right? So they may not really understand the process if you haven't set it up for them. The other thing, I think number three would be the client's not sold on the design, and maybe they're just having a tough time telling you that and letting you know. I mean, maybe that could be it. Or maybe it is client doesn't trust the ideas you're putting forth are the best ideas. They may be somebody that really has to wait and say, oh my God, I've got to just completely fall in love with this, which they should, before I say yes. Or they may just always think there's something else out there that's a little bit better, you know? I mean, that they could be those kind of things. Or they may be second guessing your pricing for some reason. Or really, it could be that a client just has a difficult time making decisions completely. Like, that's just not something that they're very good at, and you've done everything you possibly can to make it seamless. I mean, I think that covers most of the different options, don't you think, Liz? If we're talking about really after presentation, not some of the other things that could happen at the beginning of a job when they're not getting back to you with the scope of work or something like that. I'm really thinking more in this conversation about post-presentation, and then, you know, we're very methodical about how we handle it, you know, after. It's just very, this is what we do, and then we do this, then we do that. The only one I can even think of that's happened recently is a client that we're working on in New Orleans that has taken a little bit more time because of the issues with the particular type of project that it is. But it's a long-term client, and they don't ghost us. We're talking to them every week about it. It's just not gone as clockwork as typical. I think I saw a lot of perk stores for that today, Liz. So that was good job. Yes. Good job, Liz, getting that done. But I think that's the only one I can think of that really hasn't been pretty clockwork. I mean, right? I mean, can you think of anything else that it might be, or what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that these are all good kind of examples or rationale essentially for why it can happen, because we've got a client right now who's in the middle of a divorce, and that's part of why she had to put this project on hold. It wasn't the case when she first hired us, and we had certain plans to get certain things done by a certain time frame, and now the logistics of mediation are kind of infringing on that. And she still has every anticipation of doing the project, but she has to kind of protect the resources to be sure that she's good to go before she pulls the trigger. At the same time, just like you said, you kind of have to also consider how it impacts your own office, you know, how it's going to impact the flow of the project and the momentum that you've built up to get to. And I think that's the harder thing for us when we're trying to sort of keep locked in and keep focused. You know, we're getting new leads all the time, so we don't necessarily want to lose that attention to what it is that needs to happen to keep that project going. Right. But then clients, for some reason, sometimes will finally get back in touch, and then they expect everything right away. So it is a tricky little balance at times.
Yeah. It really is. I mean, it's a really good topic to discuss. And I think the other thing that comes up in a situation like with the client you're speaking about is, and to be clear on this, we're still getting paid our design fees. Okay. So that is non-negotiable. We set that up. It is all happening on a very regular basis. So we're at the point where it's just health. We're not, you know, that they're remodeling this entire thing. So, and there's furnishings and things like that involved too, but it's not a huge project, but you know, but a nice size. And I think that where we are with it is not being able to pull the trigger on the furnishings and the other part of the construction. The other part of the construction doesn't really affect us as much, because that's only project management fees and that we would be getting. And so we're not really, we may count on that, but that's a much smaller nugget that, you know, in our month, it would be very different if this client wasn't making decisions and not paying us design fees. So that's a non-negotiable thing, is that the design fees are going to be paid on the schedule that we have set, because we have done the work. But it still is a problem, because we're still, you know, then we take on, you know, five other jobs, and all of a sudden now, because we are going to be very involved in the project management with this one, right, Liz? I mean, that's thinking about the same one, that we're going to be involved in that. So then we, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, the job picks up again, and we might not be able to be as participatory in it as a client would like, you know. And of course you have to tell clients this, and most clients will understand and get that, but then there's some that don't, you know? So I don't know, that to me is probably one of the toughest ones, but I think in general, you need to ask yourself some questions to help determine exactly where the problem lies. Because if you don't know, if you're really truly being ghosted, like in our case, we're not being ghosted at all. We're in contact with the client, but it is dragging on, you know, and that's kind of a little bit of a different subject here than someone completely not being able to make a decision, you know, but it's still something personal. So you want to know, is it something personal? You know, and then I think too, Liz, that sometimes clients just let the passage of time go by, and it's just not as high a priority of them with other things going on, like a divorce, for example. Maybe it's they're busy at work, or, you know, I have a client that has a trial right now. And so that obviously is taking a lot of his attention, and he's not able to get back to us on things, and could be kids stuff, or, you know, sometimes they just don't realize they've neglected to respond. I have seen that before with other people. How that can happen, I don't know, but it does, you know, it does seem to happen. And, or, you know, maybe other things have just come up that have precluded them wanting to spend the money. If this is post-presentation, like this example, if it's post-presentation, but they're in the middle of construction, for example, then it's very possible they run out of money, right? I mean, I think everybody can relate to that one. That is certainly something that happens, and maybe they just don't know how to bring that up. But if you've tried contacting repeatedly and you're being upfront, like, hey, we need to move this along and we're getting into week three of no response, and you've asked things like, what can I do to help you on the decision-making front and all that, and they're still not getting back to you, that's when we are going to institute a restart fee, okay? Because we have to, I'm just not going to remember every job that we're doing with 25 plus projects at some stage or another in a firm like ours. I'm not going to remember every detail of a job. And that's when problems happen. That's when issues happen. This is why contractors charge for change orders, which I did not get when I was building a house 20 years ago, but I so get now. That is why they're doing that. So I think that a restart fee is a very reasonable, you know, thing to do if you are being ghosted and someone is not getting back to you on it. That doesn't preclude the problem of a client that you are anticipating to be continuing, you know, the process. And if it was a problem with a lot of clients, you can imagine the mess that would be. But it does at least help with people, remind people that, you know, you just can't not talk to us for 3 weeks or more. I think that's what we use, right, Liz? Something like three weeks. Yeah. If no contact, I mean, just nothing at all. And I think that this is definitely in our contract. So if anybody wants to know about that, it is definitely in our contract. But it's really, it's not a delay of our making. And I think that people have to be conscious of a professional relationship. I really do. I think people have to do better if there is some reason, short of they're in the hospital and, you know, or somebody's dying or something like that, that is major life changes. I get it. But I think that after 3 weeks, people can let you know that something is up or something like that. Right. That's what I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's important because you have to kind of reflect it back to the client in terms of how it impacts you. So just like you were saying, you know, our engagement level when we're first starting a presentation and getting geared up for a project is very tight. You know, we're very, you know, close to the plans and close to the materials, and we've got everything laid out and we're getting, you know, really geared up to be able to push everything through to bidding typically. And when you lose that space in between, it's difficult because it's not just the extra work that you have to go back and do, or the follow-up that you might have to do, or the repricing you have to do. You know, there's a number of things, obviously. But it's also, you know, the client's attention sometimes to what it is that they're doing. So, you know, just like you said, when there's major life events that happen and things that cause for a delay in response, you know, they're not as locked on either. And it can be difficult, I think, for them to really engage on what they even are supposed to be responding back about. So if we have a client like that right now who flies, you know, professionally, and when he comes home sometimes, I always think to myself, like, I need to give him a couple days because he's so upside down on his sleep schedule. Yeah. It's like he can't remember what we went over last time. So yeah, you have to think about those things.
Yeah. And I think too, Liz, just to be clear about it, I think that that is a different scenario than someone who is just ghosting you or not making a decision at all. You know, in their case, they have reasons for it, and they're not communicating with us. The project's just not moving along. So let's call that a stalled project and put that aside and talk about that in another podcast, because I really think that that is a complete, and we're not going to be able to do it justice today to talk about that. And I think that's even a bigger problem, because it really is not always the client's problem. I mean, it could be a contractor problem. It could be that, you know, that there's other issues that come up, you start working in a project, right? And then all of a sudden you find 40 million other things. Like, we have had termites, obviously, Florida, hello. So we've had that become up a problem that delays things. But those things are all like part of the business to me. I mean, this, what I'm really talking about now more than anything is people that are just incapable almost of making a decision, perhaps for some reason or another. And again, it could be personal or whatever, but let's just say if it's not emergency or not anything else, and then put aside for a minute, Liz, the stalled project part. And let's just talk about the client, like people that just are not capable of it. So, and here's the thing, what I want to really point out here is that you need to ask yourself, have you done your due diligence with it? Because we're sitting here assuming, okay, it's the client not making a decision, but is the client actually understanding that that's what they need to do, other than the fact that you have said, hey, okay, we've submitted the presentation for, you know, these three rooms, whatever, and we're not getting feedback back. You know, put the construction on hold for a second, and let's just talk about people not getting back to you on that. And so I'm thinking, have you established from the discovery call, the consult, the scope, how the approvals process works? Have you decided like how the project timeline, overall progress of a job needs to run? Have you given them a timeline? Because, you know, Liz, I mean, how many times I bug you about timelines? And I get in your job, it's difficult sometimes, especially since we do so many remodels. But if you're doing more decor-oriented things, it should be much easier to do that. And I think that Liz is sort of scarred by the project timelines we've had for the last few years. I mean, have been a little difficult. Hello, you know, it's just been that way. But I think that you need to ask yourself, if you have been the one who, if you have been good about your process, and if you have really done your due diligence on making sure the client is very aware, because sometimes I think you have to almost dumb it down. All right. I think you can't assume that the client understands because you've had the presentation now and you're saying, okay, now we need this, you know, money or whatever and approvals and everything else to go through, that they're always going to see the same, the forecast in the future. You know, it's, for example, right before we go to market, right? I mean, I'm always freaking out right before market to get orders in and all that, because I know once we get to market, we are going to be behind a lot of other people. And we tell clients that. We get clients to move because of that. But, you know, but they don't really get all that sometimes. Sometimes they're thinking, okay, you're asking me for $150,000. I might want to think about it or whatever. So the point here is that, are you being sure that you are establishing the expectations on that? And not just that, oh, hey, we'll be presenting in 8 weeks from the time of contract signing, whatever, you know, and kind of loose about it. In 8 weeks, give or take, we'll present the plans, you know. I mean, you have to actually really make it very concrete for people. And I think that that is something that is not always possible, especially because we've been scarred, all of us, for the last few years because of COVID and everything else. So the idea is that, you know, are you doing your job and making sure that you've established it a little bit? So Liz, talk a little bit about our process with that on a typical job. How are we making sure that the client understands that? Because really this part of it, the stalled project, happens to us like it does everyone. Clients not making decisions or really ghosting us after the presentation does not happen very often. Right. That is not something I can recall happening very quickly, other than another client that was having some difficulty with the husband-wife agreeing on things. That was a reality a few years ago. That was a little bit
talk
of a
about
problem.
A whole other podcast. But
yeah, that is, talk about, like, we've already talked about, like, we have episodes now for the next, you know, while. But talk a little bit about our process and how we go about this at the beginning, making sure that clients know, because I think that that's something that we do very well up front, although you are not always, I have to, you know, pull out a schedule out of you sometimes. There's no doubt about that, about getting that done. But it's, but talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I think that a big part of the success that we have in keeping clients on track does go back to these sort of communication touch points and agendas that we set for a lot of our process. So a handful of years ago, I mean, I can remember Cheryl coming up to me with this binder full of paper, and she had spent probably the previous 2 months in assorted meetings and all sorts of other discussions, literally trying to hone in on every single step that it takes for us to start a project, to onboard it, to bring it to life, to get it installed.
Every single step.
Because we were really trying to figure out, like, what is our workflow like? And the reason I bring that up is because it addressed a lot of the transitions that we make in different phases of our project and how the communication changes with a client between those phases. You know, we started talking more about setting agendas to sort of tighten up certain timelines and being more aware of how we can be more expeditious about getting certain approvals by keeping clients more locked on earlier in the process and those type of things. So it was a great exercise for us for a lot of reasons, but I think that it's a good thing to mention here because a lot of that, I think, does contribute to helping a client feel like, okay, you know, I've committed to doing this. You know, we get into the presentation, we're excited about it, and then they feel ready to go. They don't feel like there's got to be this big, long process to be able to really gear up. You know, when we have to deal with bidding and all of that, that's a whole other thing. But the idea really is to be able to sort of keep on top of them, to keep them, you know, active and doing their homework, and to really be sure that we're getting them different mm-hmm. feedback
engaging
and
them.
Different responses. Yeah. Exactly. Engaging right. them to be a sort of a part of that process to keep it moving. All those
Yeah, yeah. And it's really at the very beginning too. I mean, it, you know, that we're trying to get them involved and making sure that homework comes through and all that. I mean, once we have the presentation, and depending on if it's plans or and making decisions on the plans, I mean, that could be one stall out, you know, there is not making decisions yeah. on the plans. I mean, generally speaking, that doesn't happen even a little bit. I mean, the plans get resolved pretty quickly on our end yeah. of it. It's the contractors that some, you know, on the contracting end, you know, they may not, it's the, you know, from the bids and things like that, that I think everybody gets that. And I still consider that more of a stall thing as opposed to a client just not getting back to you or not, or just sitting there going, I can't decide between this sofa and that sofa, or this fabric and that fabric, or things like that, that are a little more egregious in the sense that they should be able to control that a little bit more, yeah. if that makes sense, like what I'm talking about there, Liz, as opposed to the stall outs yeah. and things like that. We do so much remodeling, it's hard not to consider all of that coming into it. But what's worse is when you are thinking that they're going to be spending a certain amount of money with you and you are projecting that, and then all of a sudden, you know, you are left going, okay, what's going on? Now, one thing to deal with that is we have our minimum expenditure. So that money's getting spent because it's in the contract and that's what's happening. We've agreed to it. The client's okay with it. Everything is set for that. What I think that is important is to be able to set a contract date that you, after you set that contract date, which is really an important thing to do here, set a reasonable contract date. And then after that, there needs to be some repercussions if decisions aren't made. It's not just like a restart fee if somebody is just sort of dragging their feet or whatever the case may be. So there's a couple of different things going on here. And I think too, we need to think about like the reality of a client might simply not be sold on the plans or the creative you presented. I mean, that's a whole nother yeah. situation that might be happening. And because a lot of people are non-confrontational, they just don't know how to say to you, especially a creative person. I mean, we talked about that with our situation with the branding, right, Liz? I mean, you yeah. know, obviously I might not have said it in the best possible way when I was horrified by some of the things that I saw, but it was still like, it's still like, you don't want to hurt someone's feelings. You don't want to, it's in a creative situation. So I think sometimes clients, you know, get like that. I think that is a fairly normal thing. Like, oh my God, I'm so disappointed. I really don't like anything that they showed me. And again, I think we do a good job on that because we do such an important and impactful intake process. So I think you need to question if this happens to you, your intake process in a big way. Did your initial intake questionnaire, preliminary design direction meeting, all of that actually hit on the wickets it needs to? And with ours, it's very comprehensive and it's very specific. You know, it's very specific on how we go about doing this, and we all talk about it as a team, and that's something that really is a benefit of having a team because you have more people. But we have very specific steps to get to that point. And here's the other thing too. I know a lot of people like to do concept boards, but we don't do that before a presentation. I've never really needed to do that. I mean, I think with Preston, maybe once we did it with the Aragon house because it was fun.
I think
and
you were just excited
I had an idea
to get dug in on it.
Yeah. But do you remember I had an idea when I was out there? I had that wallpaper in mind. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I had this
yeah.
wallpaper in mind and I was like so entranced. It was fun doing the it's like kind of like playing with AI on Midjourney, right? It's fun to come up with ideas and say these things and see what kind of pictures it comes with and generates. I don't know how much really that helps us, but that's again another podcast episode. But I have really that was really an enjoyable weekend. But that's the only time, Liz, I can remember in the last 10 years or so that we've ever done anything ahead of time with concept boards. Now, there's nothing wrong with yeah. doing that. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just an extra step that we feel so confident in our intake process and our design direction meetings and nailing all of that information down from the initial consult to subsequent phone calls to the questionnaire to all that. We feel so good about that. We don't need to do the concept boards. Now, some people might say, well, I feel really good about that too, but I feel like, you know, maybe it's a good idea to just make sure I'm on the right path or whatever. I don't know. I just feel like, there's no right or wrong in this. I just feel like it's not right for us to do that because of where we are in the, you know, how we do things and all that. And again, if you want
to
do that,
I think we try to kind of unify that too. When we're first meeting with someone, it's like, we want that a little more control probably over the perception the client has of what it is that we're trying to get to. Cause I think sometimes people can get a little lost in the sauce on that type of stuff, but not to cut you off.
Right. I think you're right. I think you're right. So question your intake process, really think about it, because I think some people just, they don't do a formal questionnaire after they're engaged. Ours is very interesting. It talks a lot about the personality. It shows pictures. So I guess in a way that's a little concepting, you know, we have the same ones, but we show pictures of our own work and we ask, you know, what do you gravitate towards? This is not your house. This is not about you, but you know, what do you like and what do you don't like? And so we can really tell because we have a very diverse portfolio and all that. So, you know, to be fair, we do it that way. But I used to say this, you know, really years ago, if I was struggling in a design direction meeting with our team, like if I was really not just locked on to it, it was almost always because we had missed something during the intake. And I consider the initial consultation an intake too. So we're taking a lot of notes and a lot of really good intel there. It's not just like we're relying on a questionnaire. But I remember thinking that, and that was why we were hesitating, because if I don't have an idea, or if the team doesn't generate like, yeah, I'm really feeling like this direction, then I feel like we haven't, something went wrong there. And that's really when we refined our process so intensely, was after that, after those kinds of feelings, you just think, you know, I don't want to feel like this. I don't want to feel like, oh my God, you know, like, I'm like such a poser. Like, I have no idea what to do for this client. You know, I mean, who wants to feel that way, right? You don't want to feel that way. And that's just not, nature, you know, it's not natural for us. So that was something that, that's one of the things that made us be more intent on our intake process.
Yeah. And I think it's important. I mean, I can remember some of those days when it was like, there was just obviously something missing from the mix, and you can't deny that. And it is so important to make sure that when we have clients in for that first presentation meeting, that we're really landing in a good place, because that excitement level we know is so critical for our process in terms of being able to get people to that next step.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
You know, we really try to maintain a very tight control over that. And even sometimes, I mean, there have been instances where when you're working through schematics, Cheryl, you'll have some additional questions that you want to follow up on. Mm-hmm. And we do pitch those to clients because we want that type of,
why not?
And that level of communication with them, so they know how we're thinking about their project for sure.
I just don't want to show anybody, I guess, the like ideas from other areas or put together like wallpaper ideas or things. There's no judging here. I don't have a problem with it if people do it. It's just not for us. It doesn't feel authentic to our process in doing that. And I don't feel like it's necessary. And it hasn't been necessary. I mean, the time when I did it with Preston, it was because I was having fun. And I think my husband was out of town and I was having a grand old time working with this one concept of this wallpaper and kind of going off of that and really coming. And, you know, it was helpful. He loved it. He loved seeing that, but it just wasn't really, it was really more for fun than anything else. So, okay. So you also have to consider something along the lines of asking yourself, have you done your best to deliver a cohesive concept? So that's another reason why people might drag their feet, is because they're not really seeing it. They're not really seeing the vision as well as they should, you know, or they're feeling like maybe it's not really responsive to their core needs, their pain points, et cetera. You know, I mean, so in other words, are you presenting a completed vision or bits and pieces? You know, on larger jobs, sure, you may need to present in stages as no one's attention span is that long. I mean, good Lord, I cannot do that unless we're like going to have like, you know, lunch, dinner, wine, you know, the whole nine. Maybe I can do that, but I definitely can lose my attention span on that. And I think clients are the same way. And I don't think it's fair to ask them to do a huge job all at once, at least not the clients that we deal with. But, you know, it's just like usually we'll do plans and then, you know, and schematics and things like that if it's a larger job. And then we go into it, maybe upstairs, downstairs, or the primary rooms or the rooms that really make a difference that we need to get on order. I mean, that makes a difference. I mean, we've been trained well now with the pandemic for doing that. But if you're not making this real for the client, and not presenting in a completed vision with all the bells, the whistles, you know, the lamps, the you know, the wall coverings, if you want that, all of those kinds of things. If you're not really doing that, then they may not be seeing it from what you're putting together. And I do think this can be a problem because I know my own team has sometimes slacked on some of those bells or some of those whistles on some of the jobs that are larger, or something that, or a job maybe that's dragged on, and we have used that as a way to not have to make a decision on something because we want to see something else come together, like a construction element or something like that. So I think that happens to people, and be realistic. So make sure you ask yourself that, you know, are you giving them a completed creative vision? Because that's how we operate. We're giving a completed creative vision. And then the client could be second guessing pricing. You know, and maybe you're taking them out of that excitement of the presentation and you're asking them to line item approve each selection. You know, I think that's a huge mistake to do something like that. That causes all kinds of angst and second guessing. You know, I mean, you know, oh, I love that lamp when I saw it all together. But, you know, now I'm going, do we need a $400 lamp? Do we need a $600 lamp? I don't know. I mean, I saw one at Home Goods. It was, you know, $999. That one's okay. Because the client doesn't realize how important it is. So we never break apart our design when it comes to creative on materials and things like that. It's all together, always, always, always. It is a creative vision. It's presented that way every single time, every single time. And it's really important because I do not want a client to second guess one item. And God forbid that, because that item may be really important, but they're not really understanding that ingredient and the recipe is really going to make it taste so much better, right? I mean, that is what I think people that don't do this for a living don't realize. So really, you know, you have to ask yourself, are you presenting a completed vision? And then secondarily, are you, once you do that and the client buys into it at the presentation, are you then turning around and saying, okay, line item approved, this. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen under my watch. Nope. That's not the way we do it. So it's a very pivotal piece to our, you know, to our whole process. And I think it's designer self-sabotage, really. I really do. But again, that could be a whole podcast in of itself. I mean, we have a whole year planned here, right, Liz?
We do indeed. But, you know, to your point, it again is a reason to kind of look at your question, you know, how are you helping the client to sort of stay on track and to stay focused both in what you're looking to achieve and what their expectation is? So I think that it's a valid concern and a valid question to ask yourself when it comes to how you're preparing for certain phases of what it is that you're doing with your client projects. You know, we like to have that more comprehensive feeling, and our clients, we know, respond well to that. That is a tried and true method for us. So there's really no reason for us not to try to accomplish that, because we know that it makes the process a lot easier and it helps avoid some of that indecision in a lot of cases, again, is obviously all part of this conversation.
And you have to prepare people for that. You have to prepare people up front. So there's a lot of preparation here and all that. Now, and let's say, okay, so the last reason is someone just can't make their mind up. Okay. So they just can't make up their mind. So I'm going through, because again, y'all, this is the way I operate, you know, looking in the man in the mirror, what can I do? What have I done? Is our intake good? Are we line iting them? Absolutely not. Are we presenting a creative vision? Have we left out some of the key elements in a bedroom, like the bedding or whatever? Are we doing all of those kinds of things? All of those kinds of things are super important that you have to ask yourself. And because that could be why someone's not seeing the vision and then not making a decision on it one way or the other. But the last really reason is that people are sometimes just not making decisions promptly. They just can't. That's just not something. Now, we like to figure that out up front, right? But, you know, it doesn't always happen that way. And I am actually just, you know, a really good, strong decision maker for the most part on most things, but yet I will agonize over the menu. I have menu anxiety. That's what I've nicknamed it, menu anxiety, because I'll be like, oh, I want this. And we'll be at a seafood place and I don't even eat seafood, and yet there'll be like chicken or steak, and I'll be going, oh, I don't know, chicken, steak, you know. So, I mean, I get the certain things, you know, or not, but when it comes to business and spending money and things like that, I'm either yes, I'm doing it, or no, I'm not doing it. But some people have a much tougher time with decision-making in general, and this is when you can try and guide them with questions designed to bring forth answers, like, since this doesn't feel quite right? What would be two things you feel would help guide me in the right direction so to see what you're looking for? Color, pattern, what do you feel is disconnected here? And this is if you're feeling like they're not making a decision because they just really can't, or maybe they like, you know, multiple ideas that you presented or whatever the case may be. I will say that we don't just come in with one idea. We almost always have two or possibly three. And there's other reasons for that. It's not that, there's a lot of reasons for that, and having options. You want to give someone something to say no to and all that. But, and then other questions might be, when you identify the style you want, what do the words modern and coastal, whatever the case may be, or traditional, whatever, what does that mean to you visually? You know, can you share an image with me or something like that? Again, this would be something good to do during the intake, but let's say you forgot that, or they did give you images and then you're saying, okay, but those images don't match. You know, I'm showing you that style and yet you're still not, you know, liking it. And you might say, you know, originally you asked for X, now you're asking for the opposite. You know, we call this the Sybil effect, that multiple design personalities, you know, and laugh about it, whatever. How can we better help you hone in on what it is that's most important to you so I can get us back on track? I mean, you know, trust us, we're really good at this, but we need good feedback, blah, 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 that sort of thing. And then sometimes just asking a client, what's more important to you with this decision, price or style? Because sometimes that's an important thing as well. You know, what you were telling me about keeping close to the budget is limiting our hand in some cases because of the style you want. So sometimes people have the beer budget and the champagne taste or something along those lines. You know, again, yeah. These are things that should be found out before now. But if you're having a client that's really indecisive, then you have to kind of help guide them back to the light, so to speak, right? Yeah. Liz, is that a good way to put that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Guide them back to the light.
I think this is an important thing to keep in mind. We talk about this a lot because I think that sometimes people's tendency is when people come in for a presentation or if you have something that doesn't quite land the way that you think it will, they just assume like, okay, like, you know, we'll revisit that or we'll go back to this, or we'll go back to that. But they don't actually act in a proactive way when they're in the meeting talking through it to really identify what is it that's not mm-hmm. hitting for you here. You know, how is it that right. we can look at this from a different perspective to try to figure out, you know, what next steps need to be? Because that really is your job as the professional in that mix, to be able to help right. them really start putting words to what it is that they feel they need or what they feel they're not getting. Because sometimes too, their perception of what something might be or their feeling about something being too bold or whatever it happens to be, it might not really totally be as realistic and founded as they think it is. I always yeah. am, you know, reminded of the pillow conversation with a client years and years ago where they folded a little piece of fabric down so tiny.
Oh my gosh.
Because they're like, well, this is just gonna be the pillow. So like I only need to see a little bit of it. You know, examples like that where people get thrown sometimes by silly things that really do need to be sort of recalibrated.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people need a little bit more of a hand holding. I mean, I'm going to a client tomorrow morning that everything is looking great. I mean, it's a repeat client and she just needs a little bit of extra assurance. And once my eyeballs on it, you know, in sight, because we've installed most everything. These are just a couple of last minute decisions that she's decided to add to the mix. And so we're trying to, you know, she's changing her mind about this, that, and the other thing a little bit here and there, but nothing, you know, egregious. But I think the point of that is that, yes, okay, let me stop by. Let me look at it. Let me figure it out. Let me give you, you know, that extra assurance that everything is going to be okay. If that's the case, because I'll say it too, if I'm, you know, if I don't feel like it's good, and this is a job that Liz has handled mostly. So it may be that she just wants me and my opinion because I've worked with her for years. She wants my opinion on it too, even though Liz has worked with her a lot too. I think sometimes people just need that extra little bit of impetus. But this whole decision make, I mean, the restart fee for us works really well if we're really at a point where people are not, you know, responding earlier on. I don't know that I would necessarily do that after the presentation all the time. I think that there's always, and again, it doesn't happen to us a lot, so I don't have a lot of experience to pull on, because most people are wanting to get it done, right? I mean, they're, you know, like they want to get it done. So, but then there's always those clients that just might be enough to push you over the edge of being reasonable if you've done everything in your power. So if you've gone through all the things we're talking about and you know it's not an illness, you know that you're like, why are they just not, you know, getting back to us? Maybe it's a client that really is time for you to part ways with. And I certainly wouldn't do that after a short period of time. I would keep trying. I would call on the phone, first of all. If you're emailing and things like that, pick up the dang phone and call somebody and say, what's going on with this? And find out really what's happening. I think sometimes we pussyfoot around it because we're either scared of what they might say or we're scared that something has happened to them. Something's gone wrong or whatever. So I think you have to pick up the phone and ask. But ultimately, there may be a client that you have to relinquish, you know, that you have to terminate. So you have to make sure that there is in your contract a termination clause so that covers yourself. If you don't have one, please get one. And the client may be okay with parting ways. They may not be feeling the experience that you're providing for some reason. I mean, you just want to do it without any bad feelings on either side. I mean, you really, really do. You want to make sure you're paid up for where you need to be. All of these things, if you're going to instigate this situation. But I would not rush to this kind of a conclusion as much as other people do. But I do think that I think, Liz, what happens, and this has come up a couple of times in the group recently, that people get into this and they're like, oh my God, this is just not good for me. But I think that you need to determine that up front more so than you do after the fact. And if you don't know, if you are coming down to the bottom and it's after the fact, that I think something is almost always wrong with your process. I mean, I can think of two clients that we have parted ways with, both on good terms, both have said lovely things about us. We got paid for all of it. I mean, no problems at all. We handled it really well. It's not something that happens a lot, but I mean, I can think of two times in the last 8 years that Liz has been here that this has happened. And I don't know why we didn't spot that sooner. I think sometimes it's just hard to do, you know, but I will say that we put a high priority on trying to figure that out ahead of time and trying to really get to the point where they're excited. And that is really what it's all about, is when you're done with the presentation, people should be excited to scratch that check, unless you're giving them reasons not to be, like, again, the line item things or, you know, that you really haven't hit the mark or whatever. If they walk out of that presentation excited, there is no reason for someone to ghost you unless there's one of these things going on. And like Liz said, you know, I think sometimes people are afraid to speak up during the meetings, and maybe they liked everything, or they seemed like they liked everything, but maybe they really didn't, or something like that. And I think this is something that, you know, we really have to, you really have to deal with upfront as much as possible so that you don't have the issue after presentation. I mean, I'd be horrified if this was happening to us as often as I see it happening to some other people. So,
yeah. And I think
anything else you have to say before we are finished with this for the day?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think that you have to have enough stamina to really look at, just like, you know, we've talked about, to really look at what it is that your process is contributing, and to identify, you know, have the client expectations been set to a place where it's fair for them to, you know, either be having frustrations or not, and then to address that. Just like you said, it's very, very rare for us to be in that type of situation. And in the two times happened, it was, you know, the circumstances were very kind of dire. It wasn't necessarily I don't like this idea, or, you know, this isn't working out for me, or I don't like those colors. We love the presentation.
I'm just thinking about those situations. But I'm proud of us that we were able to end both of those situations with good feelings intact and all of that. And it turned out that in one case, anyway, there was definitely some other situations going on behind the scenes that we surmised, but didn't really know. And it's still, and the thing, and we got paid and everything was good. And that is ultimately the goal. I think sometimes with some of these issues, Liz, I think about, you know, I mean, we all have problems, right? I mean, we're no excuse. I mean, nothing different with us. All right. We all have, we just may have different issues or different problems or different types of things that come up.
Right.
And so what I'd like to share with people in the podcast is the areas that we don't have issues with and that I see other people struggling with or other people having problems. And I will say that a lot of the times it really does come back to looking at your own process and your own, you know, self in the mirror and really thinking about, like, what the heck you know, could I have done better to make this work? And so that is something that we are very, very keen on as a team to see, okay, where did the wheel fall off? Even if it's a small, tiny wheel, it's like, what happened here? But I really do, I think we've gotten some really good ideas for other podcasts, because like the whole stalling out thing with contractors or clients just like going, oh my God, it's a $400,000 remodel and I thought it was going to be 200 and now what do I do? And all those things are really would make for some good discussions in our podcast for sure, because I think that that is something that no one can seem to escape. And so what do you do in those situations? So we'll have to talk about that another time. Okay, here is the damn good truth for today. Sometimes there is more to a no-show or ghosting than meets the eyes. Often it is the client's issue with making decisions that was not clear at the beginning of the relationship, but sometimes, let's face it, it's on us for not having done a good enough job on the front end, doing a stellar intake to deliver the wowza enough to create that excitement where the client is dying to get the project done in all of its glory. They're excited about it. They're so excited to just move forward, right? So I think it's key here is to be sure your own ducks are in a row first on your end. Just make sure your own ducks are in a row and have a lot of good self-awareness, and then try to figure out the real reason someone is not responsive and address those reasons by thoughtful questions and gently leading in the right direction while also being upfront about the bottleneck it's creating for your firm and the repercussions, because sometimes people just don't understand that you have to keep things moving. I did not understand that 25, 28 years ago, however long it was, when I built a house, I really did not understand that contractor's point of view about changes and change orders and having to keep things moving along. So this is something you really need to work on. And if all that fails to work, you need to consider if it's time to cut the ties for both of you. For both of you and move on. Sometimes there is just no other way, and that's okay if it's done in the right spirit. Thank you guys for so much for being here today. Please join us for the next episode. Take a peek at damngooddesigner.com to see what else we have going on. We really appreciate you being here.
Bye, y'all.
Until next time, stay bold, stay inspired, and keep embracing your bag girl spirit. If you've enjoyed today's show, head over to join the community at damngooddesigner.com to continue the conversation and sign up for our newsletter.